They hijack planes and trains. They kidnap diplomats and businessmen. They bomb embassies and airports and office buildings. They hold school children hostage. Terrorists. But who are they? And why do they do what they do? Are terrorists freedom fighters or ideologists? Or are they simply the most spectacular criminals of our time who may resort to even more dangerous and deadly acts in the future? Already around the world, governments, businesses, and individuals are preparing to cope with what they fear may come. A virtual, nationwide, international, global reign of terror which may literally bring about the crumbling of many societies as we know them. Are the terrorists? Some are groups fighting for territory, for real estate which they think is rightfully theirs, but controlled by another government. Foremost in this category, of course, are the extremist Palestinian organizations who refuse to accept the existence of the State of Israel. In some ways, more disturbing than those motivated by frustrated nationalism are those groups active in several Western nations that are violent spin-offs, really, from the 1960s student activism, and who style themselves as urban guerrillas and claim to be fighting the oppression of our capitalistic societies. Their motivating ideology is a curious mixture of Marxism, Leninism, Trotskyism, and perhaps most of all, the machine gun. Most significant among such groups are the Weather Underground in the United States, the Japanese Red Army, which recently conducted a hijacking, exchanging 151 hostages for $6 million and six imprisoned comrades. Also, there is Italy's notorious Red Brigade and the very infamous and notorious Baader-Meinhof gang in West Germany, also known as the Red Army Faction, which only a few weeks ago played a major role in one of the most dramatic terrorist episodes yet. It was 1 p.m. on October 13th that Lufthansa Flight 181 took off from Palma on the Mediterranean island of Mallorca with 86 passengers and crew members aboard, and they thought, of course, that they were going to Frankfurt. But within an hour after departure, four other passengers who had managed to wait till the last minute and then breeze through security stations under the idea that they were about to miss the flight, hijacked Flight 181 and told the pilot to take it to Rome. When he heard about the hijacking, West German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt was already in the middle of coping with another terrorist act, the kidnapping of German industrialist Hans-Martin Schleyer, who had been abducted a month earlier. The disturbing camaraderie between international terrorist organizations was once again illustrated as the hijackers, themselves Palestinians, demanded the release of 13 West German prisoners, including the leadership of the Baader-Meinhof gang, remnants of which were responsible for the Schleyer kidnapping. Over the next 3 days, the chief hijacker, calling himself Captain Mahmoud, took Flight 181 to Rome, Cyprus, Bahrain, Dubai, and then on to Aden in South Yemen. Here, the plane pilot, Jürgen Schumann, was shot to death. At earlier stops, Schumann had been able to signal that there were four terrorists on board, two of which were women. But for 3 days, Flight 181 had been dogged by a plane carrying a corps of German commandos, an elite unit formed after the 1972 Munich massacre to handle just such contingencies as this. 181 had left Rome before the commandos could arrive there. Cyprus had denied permission for a rescue mission to take place on its soil. And in Dubai, plans were foiled by the insistence of the United Arab Emirates that their own troops take part in the mission. Flight 181 left Aden and went on to Mogadishu in Somalia. And here, the German commandos finally caught up with the flight, and Chancellor Schmidt persuaded Somalia to allow the rescue to take place. On October 18th, in an 11-minute mini-blitzkrieg, the commandos from West Germany used special explosives to blow off the plane doors, stun the occupants, and gun down all four hijackers, only one of which survived. No hostages were killed, which was the amazing thing, and only relatively minor injuries were sustained. Germany and much of the rest of the world was no less jubilant over winning a battle with terrorists when so many had been lost, but the mood was soured when four of the prisoners, whose freedom the hijackers had demanded, attempted suicide apparently, and three of them succeeding. Of course, the fact that such suicides, if they were, and of course the terrorists and other splinter organizations claim they were not, but murdered, but the fact that they could take place in a maximum security prison touched off quite a scandal inside West Germany. And to make matters worse, the next day the German government was told they could find Hans-Martin Schleyer in the trunk of a car, and there indeed he was found. Schleyer, a communique said, was terminated in retaliation for the deaths of the prisoners and hijackers. Still, for the German terrorists, it may have been a tactical mistake. The vast majority of Germans have been outraged over the Schleyer affair even before his death. And by the way, when you think about what's happening in West Germany, you have to realize that a lot of the West German people are living in a siege mentality. One major publication, which appraises foreign publications from abroad, puts them all together and then speculates about the trend in many nations, talks about a rather violent shift to the right. Neo-Nazism rearing its head in Germany, and has been pointed out by observers who have lived and worked and written there for many, many years, like Brian Connell, who wrote Watcher Along the Rhine, and who talked about the German parties existing directly on subvention from major industrialists. That whenever disorder, when terror, when crime becomes rampant in the streets, and we have seen an absolute violent outbreak in the kidnapping and the assassination of West German businessmen, of diplomats, today, West German leadership, political, military, and in the business and financial area, must look out from barbed wire and sandbag gun emplacements at troops walking along to protect their property. But after this Schleyer affair, Schmidt, his prestige soaring, of course, after the rescue at Mogadishu, seemed in a good position to crack down on several dozen self-styled guerrillas thought to still be at large in West Germany. Technology has given us the terrorist dream, the modern jetliner. Not only are jets superbly convenient for kidnapping several hundred people with a little more effort than it requires to keep one person hostage, but there are a lot of fringe benefits like all that expenses paid trip to this or that nation on whose soil a terrorist would like to dicker over terms. Intelligence sources indicate that within the past 2 years, the terrorist underground has been discussing the possibility of attacking nuclear power stations in key nations, poisoning the water supply of a major city, stealing nuclear fuels or waste, as well as those eerie chemical and biological warfare materials, hijacking oil tankers, and threatening, of course, oil spillages or explosions near shore, what have you. Such documentation has also alleged that terrorist organizations plan sabotaging strategic communication centers, destroying railway centers, oil refineries, or offshore rigs. Underground pamphlets have been discovered in both Europe and the United States containing plans for constructing crude atomic weapons. It was actually a plot underway in Rome, foiled only in the nick of time, to shoot down a low-flying airliner with a surface-to-air missile. Some SAMs now weigh only about 25 pounds and cost less than $1,000 if you know the right people. Moscow's KGB has been widely accused of recruiting, training, and to some degree controlling certain terrorist leaders. Perhaps even more alarming, some governments may at times be virtually the pawns of terrorists. Libya's mercurial Colonel Qaddafi, for example, seems so susceptibly sympathetic to any idiotic, disruptive idea that you begin to wonder if the terrorists haven't latched onto a big, dumb, rich sugar daddy of some kind. Certainly, it's widely known that Qaddafi provides training and money and refuge. Terrorists can land there with frightened people aboard a hijacked aircraft, and the guy shows up at the airport to embrace them personally and gives them safe harbor. The mysterious and very much unknown arch-criminal of all terrorism, Carlos, is said to have been in and out of Libya continually, and that Libyans apparently finance some of these organizations, and particularly some of the more violent, splinter, radical Palestinian groups who do not like the move toward moderation taken by Yasser Arafat. Perhaps what frightens us most about terrorism is those who engage in it are not necessarily just typical criminals. And even though they claim to be fighting a war, they're fighting against oppression, they say, or against imperialism, or against capitalism, against the system or the establishment. But when you look at their deeds, you suspect their real motivation often goes no deeper than a sheer love of violence. And you might suspect that at least the majority of terrorists are really after is not some kind of reform, but rather power. That perverse power that comes from instilling terror into the hearts of others. Terrorism is all around us today, and society is becoming increasingly a jungle. And it's true that the terrorists can and do manipulate people through fear, because many people live in terrible fear of terrorist attacks.
Plain Truth, the international publication of understanding. Plain Truth, Information you need in today's changing society. Plain Truth. Correspondents in all quarters of the globe report on current trends. For your free subscription to the monthly Plain Truth magazine, call toll-free 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Articles in these magazines go behind the scenes of today's news to give real meaning and substance to what is happening and the trends and conditions in international societies looked at from the point of view of biblical prophecy. What does the Bible say is going to happen in the future in Western Germany, in Italy, the Middle East, in the United States, and around the world? Terrorism is certainly a major factor of our time. The Plain Truth magazine deals with these problems, especially in the light of what's happening in the Middle East. You can have your free copy by picking up the telephone and dialing 800-423-4444 in California, Alaska, and Hawaii area 213-577-5225. Or you might look in supermarkets and newsstands in your area, because increasingly in many parts of the country, the Plain Truth free is on the newsstands. Well, the idea of terrorism is certainly nothing new, but experts in the field tell us that in the last couple of decades there's been a change in the nature of terrorism perpetuated by clandestine groups who claim to act for specific ends. Up through the first half of the 20th century, organized terrorism was primarily a policy of assassination, singling out and killing specific individuals who the terrorists held responsible for oppression. It's certainly happening almost on a daily basis down in Argentina. But by contrast, today's terrorist we read of in the media is often indiscriminate. His bombings and skyjackings impose suffering not on anybody in particular. Total innocent passers-by, travelers, vacationers who just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And one is led to suspect that the change in tactics is indicative of a change in terrorists. For example, the most famous of early terrorist groups was one called the Will of the People, which in the last quarter of the 19th century carried out a series of assassinations in Tsarist Russia. This group, in contrast to those of today, seemed sincere enough in its claims that it viewed violence only as a deplorable necessity, the only way to achieve its ends. Indeed, its assassins, often using bombs, were very careful not to explode the devices of anybody other than a specific target might be injured. Furthermore, if you talk about organized terrorism before World War I, it existed scarcely anywhere except in the Tsarist and Ottoman empires, the most despotic regimes in the world. Today, by total contrast to that, terrorism does not thrive in a despotic country. For example, there is no terrorism in Uganda. The terrorism there comes from Big Daddy on down. It doesn't come from any organization somewhere, because he is absolutely in a policy of genocide, obliterating anybody who could ever oppose him. It's very, very rare for any dictators anywhere to groom successors. But today, in stark contrast, terrorism thrives primarily in the free world. As one expert put it, today terrorism can succeed only against non-terrorists. While the Tsar may have had problems stamping out his underground opposition, the modern totalitarian state, by its fearsome Orwellian technology, which it really is based upon, has very little trouble subduing anyone who opposes it. And so it should come as no surprise that until the Lebanese Civil War, Palestinian terrorist groups were able to use Lebanon as an operational base, because Lebanon was the only viable democracy there in the Arab world, like a little USA in the area there of Syria and Israel and there just south, of course, of Turkey. The only place where civil liberties allowed such groups to exist. The obvious question raised for democracies then is, what can democracies do to stop terrorism without curbing the very liberty that set democracies apart from totalitarian regimes? You're liable to see some very strange things happen in West Germany. A drift away from democracy and a drift into despotism. I'll just make that statement as a blanket statement that I believe you're going to see happen right now. They'll react very differently in West Germany than we do in the United States about terrorist attacks. Well, early last summer, a band of Moluccan terrorists seized a Dutch school building, taking hostage the 105 primary school children inside and five teachers. In a simultaneous coordinated assault, nine other Moluccans brought a Dutch express train to an emergency halt and held captive its 51 passengers. Among their ransom demands was the release of 21 other Moluccan terrorists being held in Dutch prisons. The first deadline came and went after 2 days, with the terrorists not carrying out their threats. After 4 days, they released all the school children when many of them appeared to be sick, but kept four teachers. At the train, the terrorists tried to intimidate the government by periodically displaying hostages with ropes around their necks. For nearly 3 weeks, the government dragged out negotiations with them and, under cover of darkness, attached listening devices to the train to monitor the terrorist plans. Finally, when the negotiations seemed to be broken down altogether and getting nowhere, the Dutch authorities decided to act. So in the early morning, fighter planes roared low overhead, terrifying the terrorists and hostages alike, of course, and dropping smoke bombs to cover an assault by Dutch troops. The soldiers concentrated their fire to the section of the train where they had found the terrorists were sleeping. 6 of the 9 were killed, and 2 hostages unfortunately died in the fire. A simultaneous raid of the school came off easier when armed cars stormed the building, catching 3 of the terrorists asleep or totally off guard. The cause of the Moluccan terrorists is their desire for an independent state in the Moluccan Islands. Islands that since the collapse of the Dutch colonial empire in 1949 have been part of Indonesia. A small group of Moluccan refugees who fled to Holland has grown into an expatriate community of about 40,000. And they've continuously charged that the Dutch sold them out to Indonesia. And young, militant extremists demand that the Netherlands do something to remedy the situation. The demand is utterly ridiculous on its face, because there's little the Dutch or anybody else could do without going to war against Indonesia, with the UN and utter global and international consequences, and the Soviets getting involved. The main result of their act there has been to kindle a seething racial hatred, as a sort of a reactionary thing, in the tolerant Hollanders. From the point of view of our present discussion, though, what is significant is the Moluccan cause is virtually unknown, especially outside the Netherlands. Before these acts, illustrating that often the only real victory the terrorists win is in the publicity they gain. Terrorist groups, in fact, have at times used the Western media as if they were almost pawns to propel themselves, that is the terrorists, out of obscurity and into tremendous worldwide notoriety. In the 1950s, Algerian rebels, aiming to drive out the French colonial power, deliberately transferred their guerrilla efforts from the countryside to the capital, Algiers. They knew they had little chance of forcefully taking the capital city, but the battle they were hoping to win was the battle for the press. And that battle they did win. In the long run, it proved the most crucial of all. Many guerrilla insurgents have fought unheralded for years in locations all around the world and got no publicity. But to cite another example, none have achieved the kind of publicity the Palestinians did, who sagaciously began to conduct missions, most notably skyjackings in Western Europe. That's where the TV cameras were, and that's where they got the coverage. However, right or wrong, somebody may judge the Palestinian cause. One of the primary reasons you even think about it is that the Palestinian leadership has really manipulated, rather skillfully, their activities so as to get the maximum advantage of the power of press and of television. One has to wonder if the media doesn't actually perform, without even really knowing about it, a rather crucial psychological service to terrorists.
History shows there have always been wars, disease, and famine, threats to local populations. But never before has the possibility of total annihilation of the human race existed until this age of the arms race, nuclear stockpile, overkill, and the hydrogen bomb. An entire generation has learned to live under the shadow of the mushroom cloud. We've heard talk not of if World War III comes, but when. Ours is indeed a unique moment in history. Except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, states a 1900-year-old warning by the prophet Jesus Christ. Are we living in the last days? You need to know. Request this important booklet for a full understanding. For your free copy, call 800-423-4444, toll free. That's 800-423-4444.
Are we living in the last days? Jesus Christ of Nazareth talked of a time of wars and rumors of wars, of drought, of famine, of international conflict, and of course, many wars have begun. You can have this article, a series of them actually, in this brochure form from the Plain Truth magazine called Are We Living in the Last Days? If you will dial 800-423-4444 or area 213-577-5225 if you live in California, Alaska, or Hawaii. Well, who are these people who fall into the broad category called terrorists? And most importantly, Why do they do what they do? The most well-known terrorists in the world today are certainly the Palestinian splinter organizations. They, more than any others, gave skyjacking its allure and its tremendous sensationalism. At times, their hijackings have been brutal and bloody, and other times, they appear to be a kind of a magnified version of the stolen car joyride done mostly for publicity. They earned the disdain of much of the world in their acts of extreme violence, like the massacre at the 1972 Munich Olympics that left 17 people dead, and the occupation in 1974 of a schoolhouse in the Israeli village of Maalot where 26 children died. Terrorism often today seems to lie somewhere between open war and just gangland-style crime. The terrorist, of course, often styles himself as if he is at war. He likes to think that he is a freedom fighter. A prime example of that is like West Germany's Baader-Meinhof gang, which calls itself the Red Army faction. Both Baader and Meinhof, of course, committed suicide in prison. For years, that gang had conducted its brand of guerrilla warfare against a West Germany, which it claims is fascist. In 1972, it bombed U.S. military headquarters in Frankfurt, killing four American soldiers. In 1975, its terrorists occupied the West German embassies in Stockholm, Sweden, demanding the release of imprisoned gang members. When those demands were not met, they killed two of their 12 hostages and blew up the building. In other countries, there are similar groups, some very much active, like the Japanese Red Army. That group's arch crime is the 1972 massacre at Lod Airport in Tel Aviv, where after they had posed as Japanese tourists, several Red Army members opened fire in the passenger hall, killing 27 and wounding 70. Well, why do such people do such things? 80 years ago, experts recorded cranial measurements of captured assassins on the theory that their brains were not properly developed. Can you imagine that? And therefore, they couldn't function as civilized people. They were supposed to be smaller heads or something. Well, truly, forest pygmies don't go around terrorizing everybody. So much for that theory. Also, back then, somebody claimed to have detected a relationship between terrorism and phases of the moon, if you can believe that. And one leading criminal expert laid the blame on vitamin deficiencies. The poor guys weren't getting enough to eat. And on the climate, concluding that terrorism declined as distance from the equator increased. I mean, some of these analysts need to be analyzed. But anyway, more recent analysts have tried to find connections between terrorism and economic trends, and that hasn't really worked out too well either. Another theory, which experts tell us we can discard, is one advanced by the terrorists themselves, that they act entirely out of political motivation. In order to combat terrorism, we need to shed the notion that we're dealing with political thinkers. According to terrorism expert Walter LeCure, it's a myth that terrorists are left-wing and revolutionary in character. Writing in Harper's, LeCure said, and I quote, "Terrorists do not believe in liberty or equality or fraternity. Historically, they are elitist, contemptuous of the masses, believing in the historical mission of a tiny minority. Slogans," he said, "change with intellectual fashions and should not be taken seriously. The real inspiration underlying terrorism is a free, floating activism that can with equal ease turn either right or left. It is the action that counts." Mr. LeCure went on to list several other myths about terrorism, including the idea that terrorists are poor, hungry, desperate human beings. On the contrary, he says, modern transnational terrorism is, more often than not, big business, lucratively financed not only by its crimes of extortion, but also bankrolled by some governments. Another myth is that terrorism appears when and where people have legitimate grievances. And quite the opposite, according to this expert, is true. He said a comparison of terrorist activity shows that violent protest movements do not appear where despotism is worst, as in the case I cited like Uganda, but on the contrary, in permissive democratic societies or ineffective authoritarian regimes. There were no terrorist movements in Nazi Germany, nor in fascist Italy, nor in any of the communist countries, and there are no terrorist organizations at large in the Soviet Union. The typical youthful terrorist in Western nations comes from a middle or upper class home, goes off to a leading university where they stuff his head full of a lot of social sciences, and is driven not by conviction, but by anger at the failure of society to make him or her happy. In fact, many, if not the majority, of terrorists in the Western nations are women, including some of the top leadership. Will terrorism continue? Will it grow worse? I would say yes to both. No one can say with any certainty if the current fad of skyjackings, kidnappings, and bombings will continue. But you can expect the mentality that is responsible to remain, perhaps manifesting itself in new and different ways. You can even expect it to grow. The Apostle Paul wrote about the days in which we live when he said, "In the last days, perilous times shall come. Men shall be lovers of their own selves," meaning to the exclusion of even basic considerations for the rights and the sufferings and hurt of others. He said they will be covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, and he said without natural affection. I mean, there are people running around with machine guns that would delight in the death struggles of a dog. They wouldn't have any more compunction of pistol whipping a little old lady to death than stepping on an ant. Now, Paul was writing in the Bible of a dangerous mood, a spirit that would increasingly be gripping more and more people in this world. And we're living in that kind of world as we see runaway crime, international crime, and especially the great arch crime of terrorism. In the future, even more than in the past, you're going to find more and more people who will embrace violence itself as a philosophy. And you will hear them talk of its terrible beauty and of its cleansing power. And you're even going to see, believe it or not, that type of talk beginning to move inside religious organizations and be used as if it were sanctified by Christ himself. You know that in the past, some clergymen have claimed that by his death, Christ sanctified the use of violence as a tool for social change, and they pervert the death of Christ to point out that it was almost like Jesus was in effect a member of some terrorist organization, who even though he himself was martyred, it took a death to really get the Christian religion off and going. Christ himself talked of a time when people will increasingly betray one another, where they will hate one another. And speaking of people even inside families who, because of religious, political, and other notions and disagreements, he says brother will betray brother, children will rise up and put their parents to death, betray them, and see them killed. A fairly apt description of the terrorist youth gangs we see around today. Even their own parents and grandparents are sold down the river, and they probably wouldn't even blink an eye at machine gunning their own grandmother to death. Jesus said, iniquity shall abound, and the love of many is going to wax cold. And that's why he said his followers would be known, be so obvious, they would stand out, if by their very way of life, they displayed for each other, not some gushy idea about people that touch each other and clasp hands and say, bless you, Jesus, but a love that is comprised of a deep, dedicated loyalty, a civility, a decency, a tenderness toward other people, a love that would steadfastly refuse to become part of what Jesus said would eventually bring to their knees our very Western nations and civilization. A Christian person simply could not even think such thoughts, let alone accomplish such actions as these terrorists are doing. But terrorism is very much a part of the world in which we live today, and it is, believe it or not, playing a part in the fulfilling of biblical prophecy. So you pick up the telephone right now and dial a toll-free number, 800-423-4444, for your free copy of the current Plain Truth magazine. And while you're at it, ask for this brochure on Are We Living in the Last Days as Jesus Predicted? 800-423-4444. If you live in California, Alaska, or Hawaii, it's area 213-577-5225. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, BC. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.